This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Who's on their way to the Festival of Football in Qatar? England are a point off after a blistering first half against Albania. Is Harry Kane back? Has Harry Maguire silenced his critics apart from Roy Keane? Is Reece James the best right back since Trent Alexander-Arnold? And when will people stop getting angry about the existence of Jordan Henderson? The Scots are in the playoffs after seeing off Moldova. Silky football from McGinn and Patterson and another great performance from Craig Gordon. The Welsh were in the playoffs anyway but are closer to a home semi after scoring five against Belarus. Elsewhere, joy for Mitrovic, agony for Ronaldo, delight for Croatia and Spain. We'll update you on the rest of the qualifiers. Dean Smith goes to Norwich, Arsenal held in the WSL North London Derby. There are players fixing floodlights and a lovely email. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barney Ronay.
Hi, Max.
Welcome. You're grimacing already. How are you?
No, that was just like psyching myself up to perform.
All right. Getting yourself in the zone just before you cross the white line. It's lovely to see that kind of feverish enthusiasm. Marcus Bean, hello.
Hi, Max. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And a pod debut for long-time listener, first-time caller, Robin Cowan, Match of the Day commentator, amongst other things. How are you, Robin?
I'm well, thanks, Max. Thank you so much for having me on. It might sound a bit like I'm a competition winner, because yes, I'm a massive fan of this podcast. So apologies.
Wow, that's exciting. Is this like a great honour for you? I mean, I would suggest aiming higher.
No, it's an honour and a privilege. You know, Match of the Day is one thing, but it's another level, my friend.
Absolutely, it's the right answer. And you know, you're in the Barry chair, Robin. So you know, if at any point you just say I didn't see it, or I don't care, or I'm not that bothered, all those answers are totally valid.
Wonderful. As a BBC employee, that's going to really help not be able to have an opinion and all that stuff. So yeah, lovely.
Perfect. Should we start at Wembley then? England 5, Albania 0. Barney, you were there. Did you have a nice time?
Yeah, I did actually. It was good. And the stadium was full, I think for the first time in a long time. They opened up all the top bits, so that was good. And England, you know, were pretty good in the first half. I mean, I was saying just before we came on in the pre-chat, which is always better than the actual chat, that Albania were terrible. You know, they had a couple of injuries early on, and the players who came on just weren't ready. The guy marking Kane just wasn't ready to mark Kane. But having said that, you still have to beat them, and they were really good. There was just a kind of weird slackness, you know, the overhead kick that felt wrong. Like, you shouldn't be able to do that because it's come straight from a corner. But I thought it was a significant game because they went back to playing basically on paper seven defensive players and three attacking players because they really needed to win, and that Southgate's kind of comfort blanket. And they played really well and kept the ball. And the two wing-backs were probably the right players to be wing-backs in that system. And it probably means that that's how England are going to play now, because there's not that many get-togethers till the World Cup. So it's going to be classic Gareth, you know, total Gareth, where we play that quite solid formation, keep the ball in the back three. And yeah, Reece James was brilliant. I mean, what a player he is. I mean, how good is Reece James? I know there's lots of good other very good right backs available, but he was really good at Wembley. I don't like to kind of just focus on how strong he is, but he is really strong. I mean, he's a brilliant footballer as well. He's so confident, like just gets the ball totally unfazed. But the guy, the number 20 for Albania, called Lorik Trashy, he just gave him a terrible time. He kept just walking through him. It was you kind of felt sorry for Trashy. He was very good anyway. And yeah, 5-0.
It's interesting you talk about the seven defensive players. Everybody was furious, Robin, about that lineup before the game kicked off. You know, the idea of Jordan Henderson starting an England game being an absolute travesty. Were you furious? Were you tweeting incessantly from your fake account that you share with somebody in Saudi Arabia or not?
Yeah, all the fake account with loads of numbers at the end. Gareth Southgate could literally, well, probably play like 11 attacking players, including a goalkeeper, and still be accused of being defensive minded. But no, I think, well, when you first see that, obviously it's, you think, well, you don't need all those, you don't need a, you immediately think you don't need the back three and you don't need those defensive midfielders, but they all contributed, didn't they? Jordan Henderson actually scored only his second goal. So actually, it's more kind of how you actually play. But I do agree with Barney. It was Albania, which was just shocking, weren't they? I mean, really, really bad, non-existent marking. I mean, yeah, it was a great performance, great result, but I'm not sure how much we can learn from it just because of the opposition.
Marcus, Jordan Henderson's interesting character, isn't he? Because look, you're a Liverpool fan. He's not a defensive midfielder. Like, he constantly, for Liverpool, is like the furthest forward player. He makes those runs ahead that create space for the front three and for Alexander-Arnold to cross the ball. Yet there seems to be this feeling. I mean, maybe there isn't this feeling. I don't know. But I sort of get this sense, this idea that he can't attack. And it's just not true.
Yeah, I actually think his best position is a number eight rather than a number six anyway, in terms of he's best when he's been got that freedom and license to bomb up, go both ways. Up and down the pitch, I think as a number six, he kind of sometimes struggles in the build-up. But that's why we play Fabinho there, generally for Liverpool. And I think that he's got a real... He makes good runs into the box, as we saw. He can assist with that great little chip ball in for Kane for his goal, headed goal. I think that he can play both ways. And I think Gareth Southgate and all managers realise that, you know, good players can take on information and instruction and employ the tactics that the manager wants. And he's won.
Etienne says, is Harry Maguire back to his absolute best after scoring against Albania, the 63rd best team in the world? He scored and then he got slightly confused about whether to put his fingers in his ears or cup his hands to his ears. One is, in my mind, fingers in ears is to the crowd in the stadium and cupping the ears is to the outside. I think he should have cupped the ears, but... You think it's the other way round, Barney? Maybe it's the other way round.
No, yeah, I think what he was saying, I think if you do that, you're saying, yeah, you know, bring it, it's more aggressive. It's like, yeah, talk, I don't care. You can talk as much as you want. Whereas that's more kind of, I'm not listening, I can't hear it, it doesn't matter, it's just, you know, it was more conciliatory. It was like, it was less aggressive, I thought. It was more mild-mannered. Roy Keane would probably say, you've gone halfway towards silent. You know, that's, what kind of gesture is that? Get your hands out here. Yeah, it was funny because watching him do it, he half changed his mind as am I going to do this? I think I will. You know, it's hard. I mean, I really hate the Roy Keane thing because it's so watchable. He's created this brilliant pantomime that I can't stop watching. I just want to watch Man United play every weekend and have all those guys watching and see what they say. And it's just like watching Dallas or something. It's not even a good soap opera, it's a bad soap opera. But it's given those pundits relevance. Like, I now am obsessed with what does Paul Scholes think about that? I haven't heard what Paul Scholes... I don't care what Paul Scholes thinks about anything, but it's brilliant. They've all done a number on us, I think, Man United. I've talked about the seventh best team currently in the Premier League non-stop. All I care about is what's Roy Keane going to say about this slightly bad performance. And it's brilliant visibility, you know. They've got the eyeballs. Their marketing people are geniuses.
Do you think it's part of Ed Woodward's plan? It was to drop these into television programmes. Like, I wonder, there's a sort of fascination with, you know, because we've had this with Neville, whether he says Solskjaer should be sacked or not, as if this is an important moment in the history of football. And I wonder, I'd written, you know, Marcus, is Roy Keane becoming a parody of himself? But maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe it's impossible for Roy Keane to reach parody levels because he's always been at that level. And as Barney says, it's quite often better than the game, isn't it?
It is. And Roy Keane's always been that man. He's just delivering what we all knew he was capable of. In terms of Harry Maguire, I think that... Personally, I think you're best off just letting your football do the talking, because now he's putting immense pressure on himself for his next game and the game after that. And I think one good performance doesn't change anything. Listen, I'm a big Harry Maguire fan. I think that the price tag is what people get, kind of hold against him. I think he's a good footballer. But yeah, definitely now Roy Keane and all the other pundits are going to be on to him next game, so he has to perform.
I just found it very strange, just in terms of the actual context in which he was doing it. Like, if he was doing it at a Man United game and he was scoring against a really good side, you'd almost say, okay, you know, fair enough. But he scored against Albania for England, where actually he has been pretty consistently good for England. I don't think the crowd have been on his back for England. I just found it like he was kind of desperate to do it at any opportunity, you know, at the supermarket or something. It's just kind of, it's very
but
strange.
But you can understand why. I mean, I always like try to pretend, I like to hope that professional footballers don't actually listen to what people are saying about them. Because if I were in that Man United team and Roy Keane and Paul Scholes and Gary Neville saying, I mean, Marcus, you'd know better than any of us. Like, presumably, how do you block that out? How do you cope with the fact that these people are instantly dissecting you on television and everyone's watching, your family are watching it, your friends, everyone who knows you. It's going to get inside your head, isn't it?
No, 100%. And you could tell the frustration would boil up. Me personally, I never looked at message boards. I used to try and stay off Twitter the day after a game because ultimately it does affect you. You know, whether it be that 1 or 2%, that can make a big difference. And you can understand why the frustration's built up, but I do believe that he should have really tried to hold that in for all the reasons that Robin said, really.
Did you never, Marcus, you never had a little look at a message board after like what you thought was a good game? You never had a little check?
Do you know what? When I was younger, I used to actually go on message boards because they were the big thing back then. And honestly, it used to destroy me. So I quickly learned to stay off any message boards, any social media. Listen, footballers do like the adulation. So if I played well, I might go on Twitter, you know. But if I had a bad game, you don't want any of that negative energy because it can affect you.
And you've never cupped the ear to the crowd?
No, I've never cupped the ears. No.
No?
No cupping of the ears, no.
Emil Smith-Rowe made his debut. He looked delighted to come on, didn't he? I get real Steve Claridge vibes from Smith, sort of a better Steve Claridge with the socks down and the sort of scruffiness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very sort of 90s reference. I mean, he was playing the Jack Grealish. I think there's an updated sort of trope, isn't there? The socks down, maverick, attacking midfield.
Yeah, but Smith Rowe has a dishevelled nature that gives him the air of Claridge that Grealish doesn't have. Grealish is too...
He is a bit... That's right. He's not exactly styled in the way Grealish... Steve Claridge, I remember once I sat down with him. I was at ITV and for some reason he was there to sort of see someone or something. He was a little bit nervous and he was wearing a suit and we were both sitting in this waiting area and there was... But there was this huge bowl of fruit and he ate the whole bowl of fruit. He ate everything in it. I came back and it was one of those, no one eats that. It's like wax fruit. No, you're not going to touch it. Steve Claridge ate the whole bowl.
Can you tell me, we're talking like 7 Granny Smiths.
It was like a bunch of bananas. That it was all kinds of different fruit. Like nice, but like you don't, no one actually eats the bowl of fruit. He ate everything. And actually I later read his book and discovered that he comes from a family of fruit farmers. And actually he used to sell strawberries to the queue at Wimbledon. He's actually obsessed with fruit. So he would have seen, like, he would have looked at that like a predator, you know. That's mine.
What are we actually talking quantity wise? A whole bunch of bananas.
Yeah, everything was gone, and they were just not wrappers, whatever you call it, peel.
And I like the idea that you just looked away once, and then you looked back,
and he hadn't moved, it gone. Just gone.
Wow. Extraordinary. Richard Jolly writes, on comes Emil Smith-Rowe, making this the 13th decade when a Smith has played for England, all except the 1880s, the 1940s and the 2010s. Dave says, if you're winning by 5-0 at half-time, should the other team be allowed to say the game is done? Everyone can have a nice break. Fans get home earlier. Fewer paper aeroplanes on the pitch. No Mexican waves. It's just better. I could have watched Gogglebox, says Dave. And Simon says, having missed all of England's goals on Friday, making tea, putting a 4-year-old to bed, what's the most amount of goals the pod have missed while watching a game of football? Do you think one game a season at half time, the losing side can say, that's enough?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Like FIFA rules, like when you're playing FIFA with your mates, you know, if you're losing 3-0 at half time, you're off. One game a season, that would be a good experiment.
Have you felt that with your Sunday team, Max? I'd like to go home now.
Oh really? Oh no, absolutely. There's a lot of let's win the second half, lads. There's a lot of that sort of chat. Really important. We showed real fight in the second half. Jacob Steinberg reporting on Gareth Southgate's contract extension, expected to extend it to 2024. Apparently the FA has been desperate to agree fresh terms. A number of suggestions he'd rather go to club management after the World Cup. Some people doubt whether he could do it at club level, which I guess is quite difficult, Barney, because it's all judged on those two games, on Croatia and Italy, like those two games where there's a sense that he kind of froze and therefore he could never manage a club team. But I mean, I don't know if that's right or wrong.
I think they're pretty different jobs, aren't they? He's really good at the things that are unique to being an England manager, which is sort of part of it's just being a communicator. You are like the nation's PE teacher. You have to talk about issues. You have to be a leader and you set a kind of mood. And he's brilliant at that. He's really good at that. And he's really good at doing the things that mean it's not club football, taking the players out of that, giving them a kind of little sense of purpose at a tournament. I think that it's really obvious that he's not in the same, he's not like someone like Pep Guardiola, he's like a manic tactician. You know, I mean, he's not that kind of person. He doesn't have that kind of brain. He doesn't have that restless, going to solve every single problem. You know, we have seen games where you've thought, oh, this is a bit, this is going wrong. Those moments where you don't know the players as well as Gareth Southgate, you don't know the team, but there are moments where as a spectator, you can feel things being missed. And you do have those with him sometimes. I think he's perfect as an England manager and I'd like to see him stay in it as long as possible.
I agree. I think he's absolutely perfect for England. I'm really proud, actually, to have him as England manager. He speaks up on important issues as well. It's kind of feels like it's more than just that. Obviously, we would have loved to have won either the semi-final against Croatia or the final at Euros. But for me, it's personally anyway, it's kind of bigger than that. He's just a good person, a good man. And I don't know, when you think about Pep Guardiola as a sort of, as a manager of a country, I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to see how he does, actually, because you don't have that time that he can't do that sort of obsessive thing where he, well, even tries to coach opposition players occasionally. You know, I just wonder how he'd
be so fraught.
And yeah, I'm not sure.
It'd be like visiting a family member you don't see very often. Like it'd be like when you got there to dinner, it'd just be like, oh, it'd be so intense. And like everything would have to be perfect. And if it didn't work, then he'd like throw it on the floor. Oh, this is a disaster. And then he wouldn't see them for 3 months. I don't know, if I was Gareth Southgate, $5 million a year, and you don't, you know, you only have to work international break. Oh, you have to be in the crowd so that people watching matches today can see you've turned up at Goodison to have a look at Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but ostensibly, you know, a few days. I mean, it sounds like...
Don't even have to stay for the whole game.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the shot and then...
God, sounds absolutely perfect. England play San Marino tonight then, needing a point. Sam Matterface claimed to have been hearing from San Marino fans in the build-up. I don't know if anyone knows us, Sam. Is there any San Marino fans who listen to the pod? Are we bigger in San Marino than Zambia, where we've recently discovered we have quite the audience? If you are a San Marino fan, please get in touch. Conor Gallagher called into the squad. That's exciting for him, Marcus, and he's been... like consistently brilliant, almost to the point where saying Conor Gallagher's had a good game has become quite a boring thing to say this season.
Yeah, Conor Gallagher's been consistently good for a number of years now. I think that his energy, his ability to get in the box again and score goals, driving past players, and I've been a massive fan. I think he's been well. This is a well-deserved call-up. If you play that consistently well, you should be brought up, and he's been rewarded for it. And yeah, I'm a big, big fan of Conor Gallagher's.
And if he doesn't start and he starts some defensive midfielders instead, I will be taken to Twitter this evening in a furious rage. All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, Ewan Murray will join us and we'll discuss Scotland. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We have a live show to be streamed into your home. On November the 30th. It was on another day. It was previously advertised at the same night that Man United play Arsenal. And however much we rate the pod, we thought maybe it was a better idea to not do it on that evening. So November the 30th, me, Barry, Wilson and Lars, you can get your tickets from theguardian.com/guardianlive. Everybody come, please. 6 billion tickets still available. Scotland guaranteed a playoff spot for the World Cup in Qatar. They won in Moldova. Let's bring in Ewan Murray, our Scottish football correspondent. Ewan, hello.
Happy days are here again. How are you? Good to be back.
Yeah. You sound buzzing, Ewan. It's a great moment, isn't it? It's the first time, that Scotland have finished in the top two of a qualifying group since the one for 98.
Yeah, and only the third time in history they've finished second in a World Cup qualifying group, I think I'm right in saying. So, yeah, heady days. Listen, they've still got a long way to go. I still think if you look at the teams in the playoff list, it's probably odds against that Scotland will qualify. But, you know, I've tried to make the point in a piece this morning. Scotland have made real progress. They've got what I think is a pretty vibrant young team who have a real togetherness. And I think what Steve Clarke has done should be celebrated and enjoyed. And I think certainly tonight's game against Denmark, I know that there's a lot of noise being made about trying to get seeding in the playoff and all this kind of stuff, but I hope the Scotland fans, I'm sure they will, celebrate what the team has achieved.
And the goals as well, you know, Patterson, Gilmore, McGinn, like the real quality in both the goals.
Yeah, I thought Patterson, I mean, Patterson's a strange case because he doesn't play for Rangers. He's basically their backup right back because James Tavernier, the captain, plays very well at right back. So Patterson's is an interesting case. Everton tried to buy him in August. I would be surprised if they didn't try to buy him again in January. But he, you know, that's a 20-year-old who isn't playing first-team football. Now, I know Scotland's only playing Moldova. They're not playing a strong team, but he fits into the international team pretty seamlessly without playing club football, which is a strange and interesting case, but a sign, I think, of what a talented young player he is. You mentioned goals. I think the one shortcoming in this team is they don't score enough goals. Quite often in games when they're on top and they're dominant and they're creating chances, they don't turn that into goals, and that could yet come back to bite them. But that's, I think in the current context, that's just a small feeling.
You mentioned players who, you know, Patterson's not playing for his club. Billy Gilmore, not either.
Yeah.
I think you tweeted, I saw you tweeting going, how is this guy not playing regularly?
Yeah.
Every time I've seen him, you know, for Chelsea or for Scotland, he looks like a sensational talent.
Well, Max, I mean, to be fair, I don't watch enough of Norwich City and I have no real inclination to do so. So I have to be slightly careful what I say. But Gilmore just looks to me like a supremely talented young player. And the bigger point with Norwich is, why did they take him on loan from Chelsea? I mean, they know what kind of player he is. They presumably know his level of talent. Why did they sign him from Chelsea if the plan was he was going to sit on the bench all season? I don't get the thought process there. It'll be interesting to see if it changes with Dean Smith in charge. I hope it does, but I just look at Gilmore play. He plays with his head up. He's unfussy, he's simple, but he's very, very effective at what he does. And I find it bizarre that he wouldn't play for a team of Norwich's standing, but they are managers and coaches know a lot more than me. But I think it raises questions as to why they bothered signing him in the first place.
Worth mentioning Craig Gordon, who made a brilliant save early on and saved that penalty, which sort of it meant it wasn't quite as stressful a last 10 minutes as it could have been. Really important for Scotland.
Really important for my intro and my match report that was all written before that penalty was awarded. Barry will know that scene well. Barney, sorry, not Barrett. Barney.
They're interchangeable,
sorry.
Barney and Barry.
Sorry.
How dare you?
Barney's just there just for those who can't see, just smoking a fag right now, drinking 2 litres of water. Anyway, sorry, carry on, Ewan.
I'm sorry, it's early in the day. Craig Gordon, yeah, I mean, he's 38, and I think Steve Clarke said he's in the form of his life. I mean, I've watched Craig Gordon since he broke through as a youngster at Hearts, and his form since he came back to the club over the last, you know, season and a bit now has been incredible. And he loves playing for Scotland. Playing for Scotland was always at the forefront of his mind when he was trying to get back fit, when he was choosing what club to go and play for. And it means a great deal to him, and it would be fantastic. Listen, it'd be fantastic for everyone to get to a World Cup, but for Craig Gordon at 38, it'll be 39 in December, to be playing, you know, in the World Cup before the end of his career, I think would be fantastic. I mean, you have to remember he basically played one game in 3 years because of a serious knee injury. Now, whether that's added time on to the end of his career, I don't know, but his form has been, you know, I can't speak highly enough of how well he's playing.
Now, Ewan, you were desperate to stay for the whole pod, so you're welcome to, but just on the off chance that you leave the Zoom of your own when we move on from Scotland.
The upcoming topics, I'll speak about Steven Gerrard, Heart of Midlothian,
yes.
Anything else in between.
Yes. Okay, well, I want to ask you about Steven Gerrard and kind of the feeling. I mean, I guess it's really interesting the impact that this might have on the title race in Scotland, given how well Postecoglou's now doing with Celtic, kind of what Gerrard's legacy is at Rangers and and how people have taken it. I mean, I have seen some sort of slightly ludicrous videos of people punching cardboard cutouts or marching him, a cardboard Steven Gerrard out like it's a coffin. But, you know, what's the vibe amongst more sensible Rangers fans?
Well, I think they're disappointed. Dare I say, slightly hurt. They're not angry with Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard was adored by the Rangers support, and the fact he won the championship last season elevated him again. So there's not anger, well, I mean, apart from cardboard cutout punching, there's not anger and resentment and bitterness towards him that I've detected. The title race is interesting. This is a strange season because I think both teams have got glaring weaknesses, and it's a slightly odd campaign in that sense. From the start of the season, I mean, bear in mind Celtic were 25 points adrift at the end of last season, and I remember we spoke at the start of the season and I said, I can't see any chance that a 25-point turnaround can take place. Well, as we sit here now, it could take place. Rangers are 4 points ahead. They have, funnily enough, they've been better in their last couple of domestic games, and now the manager has left. So that inserts an element of unknown around it that we're going to have to wait and see. It depends how Rangers, you know, of course, firstly, who they appoint. Giovanni van Bronckhorst is the clear favourite. How the team reacts, and if Celtic can keep up their decent domestic form. So put it this way, there's more unknowns in this Scottish domestic season than it looked as if there was going to be in the end of July, start of August.
Don't you think, just to play devil's advocate, that this doesn't happen, the Steven Gerrard thing is quite unusual. Like managers, I don't like managers leaving a club midway through the season. I think it really stinks. And to leave a club where you're going for the title, it's really, I mean, has that ever happened before?
Brendan Rodgers did it, and that was different because there was real resentment from Celtic supporters towards him when he did that. That was February, I think. Yeah, listen, there was an acceptance and understanding from Rangers fans that Steven Gerrard would leave, that there would probably be a stepping stone pre-Liverpool. I think that probably the acceptance is he regards Aston Villa as the best option, and this is the time that the job came up. But of course, yeah, the kind of, as I say, the hurt will be that Rangers are going for a massively important title in the sense that, you know, there's likely to be automatic Champions League qualification at the end of it. It's a huge deal to win this Scottish title in financial terms to the club. So that's the bit that stings Rangers. His reasons for doing it, as I say, I think there's an acceptance he was going to go to England. He probably needed a Premiership job to show in front of Liverpool what he could do. And he regards Aston Villa as the best option, and this is the only time he could do it. There could be broader issues. Rangers have, you know, just released their accounts, £23.5 million loss. Steven Gerrard spoke a few weeks ago about the need to invest more money to compete in Europe. Things like that, if you piece them together, you can come up with five. But yeah, the timing's not ideal, certainly, Barney, from Rangers' point of view.
And a word on Postecoglou, who is a kind of demigod in Australia. How's he doing?
Very well in some senses. Celtic can be great to watch going forward. Kyogo Furuhashi, the Japanese player, has been a sensation. They're still pretty poor defensively. In fact, they can still be very poor defensively. So they're exciting to watch. I can't quite decide how effective this is going to be because I see them, as I say, play this swashbuckling, fantastic attacking football, and then they lose the softest of goals, and you think, this, you're not going to win things playing like this. So I think by general consensus, the Celtic support is doing well. In Kyogo, he's signed a new marquee player, a player that everyone loves, a player who's become a focal point of all that Celtic are trying to do. But I think we're still unclear as to how effective Postecoglou is going to be. January is going to be very important because he's had to rebuild a team. They still need more players. I think on balance, he's doing well. But you know me, I don't like going to extremes about people doing fantastically well or people doing awful. I think we're still trying to work that out. But I'll put it this way. He's doing a lot better than it looked as if he was going to do in the early weeks of the season when he was kind of fumbling around in the dark a bit.
A lot of our listeners won't have heard the name Bertie Auld, who's passed away at the age of 83. Can you furnish with a bit more information about him and what he meant to Celtic?
Well, he meant a great deal to Celtic. He was part of the team that won the European Cup in 1967. Bertie had two spells there. He was later a manager at umpteen clubs, Hibs, Partick Thistle among them. Bertie was an iconic Celtic player, an iconic Scottish football figure, really. Everyone knew who Bertie Auld was. And I remember him as a real charismatic, funny, terrific guy. He was around Celtic Park, it felt like constantly. And when you were, I wasn't in his company very often, but in the few times I was in his company, you left with a smile. He was a funny guy. And he had a gallusness that probably typified that 1967 team that won the European Cup. So that was a sad loss and a major loss for not just Celtic, but for Scottish football.
Ewan, thanks for coming on, mate. You're welcome to hang around. It's completely your choice. We're on to Wales, Belarus now. Do you have any hot takes?
No, sorry, there's a breakfast with my name on it. Sorry.
Fair enough. I'm afraid the rest of you have to stay. Cheers, Ewan. Thanks for your time, mate.
All the best. Speak soon.
Could I just say on this Gerrard thing, this Ewan said, and he's not the first one to say, it's sort of a stepping stone to Liverpool. And it makes me very uncomfortable, I've got to say, for a number of reasons. Like, first of all, it puts kind of unnecessary pressure on him. What if he doesn't do a great job at Aston Villa? I guess, Marcus, as you're a Liverpool fan, will you be kind of supporting Aston Villa now? I mean, and Liverpool tweeted, oh, he's been appointed Aston Villa manager. Just found that it's all very strange.
Yeah, I did. I was surprised, if I'm honest. I still believe if he stayed at Rangers for another 2 years and continued the success he has, why couldn't he go straight to Liverpool? I wasn't really buying into that. You have to come to the Premier League to do a job, and then before taking a manager's job. And there's immense pressure on him now. Every game is going to be scrutinised, and you know what is a good season for Villa. You know the expectations are high. I'm not too sure. You know what's it probably looking at. He's got to be finishing in the top 10, maybe top 6, maybe even, you know, now to really say you've done a great job at Villa, top 6. Yes, pressure's immense on him.
Well, describing them as a stepping stone is a little bit insulting, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose there's a pecking order, isn't there? I mean, the real question is, does Steven Gerrard really understand the DNA of Liverpool? That's the question that I think needs to be asked.
Well, where does the talk that Gerrard's going to manage Liverpool come from? It would be a really, really weird move. It would be totally out of character with everything they do. It's a really smartly run club. You know, there aren't any loose bad decisions. You know, they sign players cleverly. They've got a brilliant manager. Everything's run really cleverly. Why would you suddenly decide to have a sentimental managerial appointment of guy who managed Rangers to one title? It's a weird idea.
Perhaps they look down the road and see what sentimental appointments do at Old Trafford and think, we want a piece of that. Let's round up the rest of Europe. Ellis spoke brilliantly about Wales on the last pod. They beat Belarus 5-1. Gareth Bale made his 100th appearance for Wales, coming off at half-time in a planned move to keep him fresh for Belgium on Tuesday night. It's a wonderful moment for Gareth Bale, Barney.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it's happened a few times already. Isn't he always playing his 100th game? Every Wales game is like a big family wedding where Gareth Bale is making a speech. It's really nice that he's constantly being celebrated, and it's always Gareth Bale Day. And I really like the way Wales enjoy football as though it's this huge familial event. I'm sure he's played about 400 games by now and probably scored his 100th goal, and he should be the manager. I mean, he kind of is the manager. Nobody loves doing anything in sport as much as he loves playing for Wales. It's just fantastic. Why do anything else? Why not just play for them?
I really hope does just play for them. I mean, in many ways, that is what's happening. But, I if he just said, I'm retiring from club football to concentrate on international football, would be a joy. Ben Davies got his first goal for Wales off his shoulder. But, well, I mean, I presume he must have played about a million games for Wales, Ben Davies. He's always there, isn't he? So they're guaranteed a playoff place, having won their Nations Group last year. But to have any chance of a home draw, they must finish second in their World Cup qualifying group. If Wales and the Czech Republic end on the same amount of points, second place will go to the team with the best goal difference, or failing that, the team with the most goals scored. I'm sure Wales fans know all this. Wales' goal difference is currently 2 better than the Czechs. So there we are. Northern Ireland beat Lithuania 1-0. Luke says, not a question, but 17-year-old Dale Taylor made his debut for Northern Ireland despite not making a senior appearance for Forest yet. Probably worth a mention. Maybe Dale Taylor will be the first footballer to never play a club game, but to get to 100 international caps. Ireland won 3-0 in Luxembourg, playing in a Wolves kit, which I found deeply disturbing. A Shane Duffy header. Chidozie Ogbeni with a lovely move, ending off a lovely move. And one great save from Gavin Bizzano, a fingertip save. Elsewhere, Serbia won 2-1 in Portugal. Last-minute winner for Alexander Mitrovic. Producer Sammy saying, look, I'm so happy for Mitrovic. Just over a year since that penalty miss and his worst season domestically for Fulham, he's now taken his nation to the World Cup, on track to break their all-time second-tier scoring record. That's a narrative, he says. Spain are through. They had a crunch game with Sweden. They won that 1-0. Did anybody see the weather in Croatia, Russia? Did anybody see how wet it was? It was like a bog. It was absolutely tremendous. And Fedor Kudryashov scored an own goal late on. It sort of bounced off him, and then he just lay covered in mud. It was just like Sunday league football at the most elite level. It was absolutely tremendous. So look, playoff news. They take place from March the 24th to the 29th. 10 group runners up, joined by the two best group winners from the Nations League overall ranking, that have neither qualified directly as group winners nor entered the playoffs already as group runners up.
Stop.
No, I tell you why, Barney, somebody told me off for not taking who was in the playoffs seriously. I've been taking your attitude for a long time, and someone told me I was being patronising. So I'm trying not to be.
No, who's in the playoffs is good. That's interesting, but exactly what weird, labyrinthine, impossible combination of words needs to happen for people? Basically, you're going to play someone and you have to win, and then you'll go through.
10 runners-up as things stand. Portugal, Sweden, Switzerland, Finland, Wales, Scotland, Norway, Russia, Poland, North Macedonia. There we are. Dan says, did Max enjoy Australia's resounding 0-0 draw with Saudi Arabia on a cold, wet, windy Thursday night in Parramatta? Given the result, what are your thoughts on Australia's chances of qualifying for Qatar? Well, Craig Foster says tells me, and you know, he's sort of like my Zen master now because he's a humanitarian hero and a very good analyst of football, says it's going to be tough. So it's going to be tough because you've got to come in the top two, and Saudi Arabia and Japan, I think, are ahead of them. But like, I'm not completely sure. I couldn't watch the game. I was doing a podcast. Greg says, is the steward's tackle on the pitch invader in the Canada game the greatest bit of defending since Bobby Moore on Pelé in 1970? I sent this to you. Did any of you watch it?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Oh, you did see it. Marcus, could you talk me through? There's something great about a rugby tackle that goes into the... He sort of cut him in half with an advertising horn.
He did, yeah. He literally folded him in half. It was a sum tackle. Yeah, you go on the pitch and, yeah, that's what you get. I thought it was a great tackle.
Joe says, can you ask Marcus, brackets one cap for Jamaica, why are Jamaica still struggling in qualification despite the likes of Antonio, Bailey, Roof, Decordova, Reed all now playing for them? Surely they're a better side than the likes of El Salvador and Panama. Are you equipped to answer that question, given you have one more appearance than the rest of us for Jamaica?
I think it's just probably, you know, you can have all the best players in the world, but ultimately, you know, it's how your coach, I think they've had the same manager there, Theodore Whitmore, for a long time now, hasn't really generated much success apart from the one Gold Cup run they went on. I just think it needs, just change, not necessarily from the players, but like from the top to the bottom. But yeah, as you said, they've got some fantastic players, but just can't put together great performances at the moment.
Have we had this conversation before? Who was your one cap against?
It was against Honduras, in Honduras. It was, yeah, that was some experience, I've got to say.
What was the score?
We lost 2-1. Yeah.
Did you play the 90?
No, I come on for about 20 minutes at the end. But it was a great experience, yeah.
You had that moment. How did it come about?
I was playing quite well that season. And then, yeah, I've got the call. I remember my manager at the time was Uwe Rosler, and he didn't really want me to go because we were on a good run. But I insisted. So I went out there, obviously played a couple of games and came back and couldn't get back in the side, which wasn't great because obviously the team was still playing. So, yeah.
Oh, right. So you went to play for Jamaica. You didn't get called up for Jamaica again, and you lost your place in the QPR team as well.
He did tell me, Brentford, he did tell me I wasn't going to, if I came back, I would struggle to get back in. So I was fully aware that I would struggle to get back in. So, yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sorry for bringing it up. Sorry for bringing it up again.
Anyway, thank you, Max.
That's all right.
Cheers, Max.
Yeah. In part three, we'll talk about Barney and Robin's biggest regrets as well, just to make them all feel better. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Don't forget, I think there is still time to vote for us in the FSA Awards. We're nominated for Best Podcast. Unbelievably, Ronne overlooked this year. Are you not the current, are you the reigning champion, Barney?
Of what?
The Football Supporters Association Awards.
I don't know. Can I be honest?
You're not in it for the awards.
I hate awards, dudes. They're nauseating. I don't understand why journalists give themselves so many awards. Endless awards. There seem to be millions of them. I did win something.
But do vote for The Guardian.
I won something and I wasn't there. And I think that was a problem. I remember that happened. I got WhatsApp messages. Where are you? Maybe it was that one.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, obviously don't vote for us, given that they don't mean anything, but you can vote for us. Or you can vote for Johnny Liu, Susie Rack, Jonathan Wilson, David Squires, The Guardian, this podcast, my radio show, Ali McCoist, whoever you want to vote for them. Vote is opening until midnight on the 16th. It's not about winning. It's about not losing to any of the other podcasts. That's the key. Norwich City have released a statement. They are delighted to confirm the appointment of Dean Smith as the club's new head coach. He has put pen to paper on a 2.5-year contract. Will be joined in Norfolk by assistant head coach Craig Shakespeare. It's been a whirlwind 7 days, says Dean Smith. I'm really pleased to be back and working for Norwich City in the Premier League. Back doesn't seem the right... I mean, being back feels like it needs to be longer than like the 2 minutes he was without a job. Now, we know that Ewan Murray has no interest or inclination in watching Norwich. Robin, I presume you get to see a bit of Norwich. Do you kind of think that... Because Frank Lampard pulled out of the race to become the manager. I sort of get the feeling that that's a good thing for Norwich, that Dean Smith is much better placed to do this.
Well, he's certainly more experienced. That's the first time he's been sacked, actually, in his career at Aston Villa. And I still, maybe it's because he's I really like him personally. He remembers my name, which is more than can say for some managers. So I was really quite sad when he got relieved of his duties at Aston Villa. Also the fact that obviously it was his boyhood club, so the romantic in me wanted him to do well there. But no, he's got a fantastic record, you know, Brentford, Walsall. And yeah, I mean, they're not going to stay up. It's extremely unlikely. But he's the one you'd want in the Championship, I suppose. I think they made a good decision. I did, though, think that while Jonathan Wilson is churning out these pieces about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, if Lampard did get it, he'd get another sort of easy... he could go back to another of his greatest hits with Lampard and how he did with Chelsea and the sort of weaknesses they had under him. So I do... I feel like, he could... That could have been another easy paycheck for him if that did happen.
Can I just say I support the use of the word churn there in relation to Wilson's pieces on Man United. It is churn, and it's great that somebody's said that. But the thing about Norwich, they're not dead. Like, there's still 27 games to go. Is that right? And they're on 5 points. And if they are on 10 points, they'd be out of the relegation zone. I don't think they're down at all, and they've got good players. It's just they played some really bad games early on, and we kind of wrote them off. I think they're very much still in it, personally.
Robin, are you as bad as Gary Neville? You can't criticise Dean Smith because he's a mate. Is that what you're saying? I'm more interested in who are the managers who don't remember your name? Who are the managers that come up and say, have we met before? And you're like, this is the 100th time we've done this. name names.
Pretty much every single other one, to be honest, because they're not very memorable. But yeah, the other thing I was going to say is his first game is going to be against Southampton. I'd love if they could troll Ralph Hasenhüttl by him just managing whoever Southampton are playing every week now. Just every time he comes out of the tunnel and Ralph Hasenhüttl's like, oh, you again? I thought that'd be quite good.
let's talk about the WSL. You were at the North London Derby, Robin. Spurs and Arsenal drawing one apiece. And you know, nobody expected at the start of the season Spurs to be quite as good as they are. I mean... Arsenal probably should have won this game, but at the end, they were lucky to get a point late on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it was a fantastic game because everyone was saying, oh, well, you know, yes, it's a North London derby, but it's always so one-sided. But it was brilliant, really good. Yes, Arsenal should have won. They hit the bar twice in the first half. But Spurs were just so resilient. And it was actually the names that are not... household names that really shone, like Ashley Neville, who we gave player of the match, right back, kept Katie McCabe quiet. Kit Graham and the goalkeeper, Corpola, had a fantastic game, had to, against Arsenal. And yeah, it was just great, really good. Spurs have just been, the improvement in the off-season has just been ridiculous. Them and Brighton have been really surprise packages. And that also kind of really rips up, well, not rips up, but kind of makes the title race a lot more interesting with Arsenal dropping their first points of the season.
Chelsea won 4-0. So you think it'll be between Chelsea and Arsenal? And in a sense, any drop point is massive, right, for those two sides?
Yeah, it is, because there's only 12 teams in the league. So it's almost like, especially if you drop points against those non-so-called big three, although Man City should be included in that big three, and they're certainly not now. I mean, that was the interesting thing, that 4-0 against Chelsea was the biggest disparity in scoreline over the weekend, which is pretty shocking. Interesting to see if they do get rid of Gareth Taylor. I think most of the women's football sorority are quite not very impressed with him generally, and he sounded a little bit... Well, Susie Rack tweeted, I'm going to attribute this to her, deluded in his post-match press conference after that 4-0 defeat yesterday. It was quite strong words, but, you know, he was kind of saying, well, we can take the positives, you know, we played some good stuff, but they've not been good this season. And they're ninth in the table, they're 8 points off a Champions League position with nearly a third of the season gone. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see if Man City act.
Dan says, maybe too niche for this pod. No, it's not. When will the standards of refereeing in the WSL match the investment interest in the playing side? You're nodding feverishly, Robin. Are the refs terrible? Or?
Well, yeah, but I feel for them because they're not full-time. The players are full-time and they're not. So you're going to get these decisions and there's no VAR, so no one to help them out. In the Spurs-Arsenal game, there was the most bizarre piece of refereeing with Amy Fearn. There was an Arsenal player who was fouled on the touchline. They played on, and just as Jordan Nobbs was about to take a shot, she blew the whistle to give the foul earlier on. So it was just stuff like that that's so frustrating. But don't blame the individual referees at all. It's more that they need more support.
Simon Hughes tweeted, he's at The Athletic, Simon, I think, at Marine, where the floodlights have gone out. Obviously, Greg Bukowski's former club, of course. One of Dunstan's midfielders is a spark and is trying to sort it out. He's now on the phone to a mate back in the northeast. It's a brilliant picture of the Dunstan number four with the fuse box open. His head's right in it. Tremendous stuff. I believe he fixed it in the end. I can't remember the result. The result doesn't matter. Man fixes floodlights. Janet says, for Robin, what's your favourite gantry and why? Oh, God, I like gantry-based questions.
That's a tough one. Favourite gantry. Norwich is quite good, actually. Good position. Right. For me, because I'm 5'1", so right. None of them are great. I always have to stand up. I can never sit down because I can never see the near touchline. They haven't built one for people my sized yet that's appropriate. But
are there some games on Match of the Day where you actually can't see some of the pitch and you're just making it up?
Always making it up. Yeah,
good.
Always doing that. Yeah, I think generally Premier League grounds are fairly good. I was doing. I did St Albans in the FA Cup last week, and they had to build a gantry for that one, which they usually do at these non-league grounds. And there was a really long ladder to climb up, which is fine. But what wasn't fine was that it was right in front of their fans, and they were all going, "Ooh," you know, like behind a goalkeeper. I was like, "Yeah, I don't need this before a game."
I think Crystal Palace, which that's ladder based. It was quite precarious, and I went up to film a dance with Martin Tyler, obviously. And
it's glorious.
and Alan Smith, they were both very amenable. But I did think Martin Tyler is, you know, he's not a young man. I don't know, like, it's tremendous effort to get up this. I'm not going to be climbing ladders when I'm in my 60s. That's for sure. Now, Marcus, you the Wealdstone Raider beat the shit out of you at the weekend. Is that accurate or not quite accurate?
Not quite. Yeah, I was at the local derby, Barnet v Wealdstone, taking in a non-league game. Yeah, and I met the Wealdstone Raider for the first time. Yeah, a very interesting character, to say the least.
Okay. Yeah. Did you want some?
No, I did not want none of the Wealdstone Raider. I think he'd give me a good kick in, mate. So no, I was my best behaviour.
And were you there on professional duties? What were you doing?
No, I was just going to support. My mate owns is a chairman of the club, so yeah, just going down to support on my doorstep. And yeah, I do enjoy going down to the Stones and watching them. So it was a good game. Yeah.
And how's everything going at Brentford? Because you know it does seem like, especially the evening games at Brentford. You know, it's not quite Liverpool under the lights in a European night, but there's something about the atmosphere of that stadium. I'm yet to go, but just seeing it on the telly looks absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, the stadium's amazing. I think everyone involved in that process has done a great job. The atmosphere's brilliant. It's very tight, kind of traditional English pitch. You're right on top of the pitch. The view from anywhere in the stadium's amazing. And yeah, and the acoustics are brilliant. The noise is just, yeah, it's special. You know, that transition from Griffin Park to the new stadium has been, yeah, perfect. Yeah, really good.
And, you know, and it's, the season's getting slightly tougher for Brentford after like a brilliant start. But I guess, you know, if you sort of said these are the points you will have, not necessarily telling you where you were going to get them, you'd probably be happy, right?
It's been a great start to the season. Apart from one half against Burnley, I think we've been good. Even in all those games, we've been more than in it. I think if you look at statistically, I think we've been creating more chances in the opposition, conceding less chances. So I don't think it's as all doom and gloom. And yeah, let's see. After the international break, we've got Newcastle's massive game.
God, I hope you win that. I'll get yelled at by Newcastle fans. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean it. Here's an email. We'll finish with an email from Barney. Dear Max, Barry and everybody, a couple of weeks ago, I thought I'd try an experiment. I've written in to you before and you rather surprisingly read out my tweet about erroneous things you'd said when discussing the new English hymnal. I vaguely recollect that. Max, you also once read out a tweet of mine on the radio about the fact that my brother can fit through a coat hanger. And I managed to get written up in an MBM report of an England game about a year or so ago when pointing out that none of the teams selected had ever played together at club or full international level before that night. It was some weird pre-tournament friendly. Thrilling experiences, all of them. Getting read out on the radio still gives me a childlike buzz. Interestingly, I get that buzz. Like if I text Hawksby and Jacobs and they read it out, which is ridiculous since I spend quite a lot of time actually being on the radio, but I know the feeling. But these successes left me with a problem. I was worried I had no more mountains to climb. Then I had an idea. What if I could appear on the pod as a news story? A difficult trick because I'm not involved in the world of football in any way, but I'm quite good at storytelling. And I noticed that Barry was on a hot streak of anecdotes the other week. So I started adding them to his Wikipedia page and waited to see how long it might take you to notice. The answer in the end was under a month. Following my work's moment in the sun, all my additions have now been deleted from Barry's page by an account in New Jersey who it appears mostly writes about sumo. But I'm very glad they made you and the panel smile. The truth is that Barry is a great storyteller. I only wrote down the beautifully shaped things he said, and they came out funny. You can tell he was a stand-up, and he should do it again. So I'm not going to read this, obviously, when Barry is on a pod. That would be too much. I'm one of the many who owe you all a great deal for the content you've put out through these last few years. I lost touch with most of the people in my life several years ago. I'm trying to find my way back to them, but it's hard when trouble has changed you. And in the meantime, listening to you has been about as close as I've got to some years of having friends, hence having enough time to muck about with Wikipedia pages. Thank you. Lots more about what a volley is, please, for all the reasons you've previously outlined. And if you could ever cover Steve Claridge's work at the mighty Salisbury, that would be much appreciated. God, we were so close today and we just didn't quite manage. we got onto him demolishing fruit bowls before we could even get to Salisbury. There we go. Finally, Max, I started listening to this pod because I went to your old college in Oxford. This is no good for my man of the people status here, Barney, to suggest these things. I have a job there now. If you're ever back in the UK, I'd love to invite you for dinner. Blimey. For Barry, I'm a playwright, and I agree nearly all plays are shit. Oh yes, Barry dismissed theatre in one line once. But mine aren't, so you should come and see one time. Keep up the good work, Barney Norris. Well, thank you very much, Barney, for that email. And, you know, thanks for contributing to Barry's Wikipedia page. And whoever the man who writes about sumo, you know, understandable that he got them deleted. I don't really know how Wikipedia works. All I know is that at one point I was going out with Louis Walsh and a member of the BNP at the same time, which seemed quite a weird juxtaposition. But anyway, thank you, Barney. And thanks to everyone for coming on the pod today. Thank you, Barney. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, Robin. Excellent debut.
Oh, thanks, Max. Pleasure.
No, that's okay. And thank you, Marcus.
Cheers, Max.
We'll be back tomorrow to review San Marino 1, England 7.
This is The Guardian.